Letters to Lelia, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 9, Uncertainty. Where are we going to host the science symposium? It has come to my attention that the WISPs expect to spend some of their time here discussing multiverse physics with Purple. Sarah lifted her head from her research to find herself face to face with Roberta. She didn't hear her come in, but that wasn't an unusual occurrence. Her private office, the spacious one with its own VR room, covered lanai and garden, was anything but. Sarah had long abandoned the expectation that if somebody wanted to stop by, use the equipment or borrow something, they would bother to ask her. "I assume that any number of conference rooms in this impressive building will prove adequate," she replied. "They assumed they could conduct the discussions outdoors. They don't feel comfortable in confined spaces," Roberta pointed out. "How about the beach? The ocean is right there. Makes things easy," said Sarah. That's precisely what they had in mind, but they are concerned that the children are going to run around unsupervised. "We'll restrict access to that portion of the beach for a few days," Sarah suggested. "They would like to break up into several focus groups, which are going to be in constant flux," Roberta said. "Why don't you tell me directly what exactly they have in mind? There is no reason to run through already rejected options," Sarah tried to bring the conversation to a point. "They were thinking of using Hunlone and Sis as proxies for a bridge," Roberta said. "That sounds very sensible," Sarah replied. "Sis would have to morph to cloud form," Roberta clarified. "Well, she's done worse," Sarah replied. "I thought you were going to protest. I know how you hate it when Sis changes form," Roberta said in a softer voice. "To tell you the truth, I'm kind of excited for her. From all I heard, this simplex cloud resonance is something worth experiencing. She is lucky she has the ability to do that." Roberta looked at Sarah, whose eyes were lost into the distance, somewhere in a dream world where she too could join the simplex cloud in gaseous form. The sister watched her for a second, then burst into a hearty laughter. "You too? We're absolutely incorrigible. There's never been any hope for any of us to behave sensibly. If I didn't make it to the terraforming program, I'm sure I would have found another way to get myself in trouble," she said when she was able to speak. "What else is there to do with life? If you don't go for the things you find interesting and exciting, why bother?" Sarah replied, a little surprised. "You are a little surprised bundle, you know that?" Roberta smiled. "I wouldn't have pegged you for a thrill seeker. When I met you, I thought you were going to ask the kitchen broomstick for permission to breathe." Sarah frowned at the memory of her very submissive younger self. "Lucky for me that through a proper regimen of rudeness and neglect, your loving heart set me straight. I'll never be polite again," Sarah retorted. "Sorry, dear, I didn't mean to rattle you, but when did you become such a little spitfire? I remember the before and after, but I can't point to the precise moment." She looked at Sarah, her eyes sparkling with mischief. "Maybe there wasn't one," Sarah replied. "How do you know I wasn't born this way?" Roberta looked at Sarah, whose hair still had the luminous color of a candle flame, not dulled by the passing of time. "Maybe you were," she smiled. "Do you think I would have made it to Terra too if I wasn't?" Sarah smiled back. "I don't know. Mary Frances has a placid and accommodating personality," Roberta enumerated. "And Therese," she continued. "Sister Mary Frances didn't spend 6 months among buckets of stinking muck." Sarah remembered the beginnings of her life in the order. "Do you regret your choice to join our group?" Roberta asked. "Are you kidding? And miss out on all this? Do you?" Sarah replied. "To think that I could have spent my life managing my father's sheet metal factory," Roberta said. "Was he upset when you told him about the terraforming mission?"
"Not upset.
Disappointed in me." Roberta frowned, still hurt by the memory. Sarah didn't press the issue. "We all go through life with wounded spirits. Some wounds are superficial, some very deep, and this particular issue seemed to be of the latter variety." Roberta shook her head to chase away the shadows of the past. "Anyway, I'm glad you're okay with Sis morphing into a cloud," she continued. "This is her choice to make, not mine," Sarah smiled. After Roberta's departure, Sarah stepped out into the healing garden. She sat on one of the stone benches, with Solomon in her lap, and watched the sun set over the ocean and the moon pop over the horizon, giant, green and looking too close. Maybe Roberta was right, she had changed. She tried to remember the moment that happened, the moment when Sarah with the angel hair became the person she was now, but she couldn't pinpoint it. Maybe purple jeans had something to do with it. Maybe the redhead jeans had something to do with it. Maybe it was because she'd lived so long. Maybe it was because she wanted to emulate Seth. Maybe it was the knowledge she had accumulated over the centuries. She smiled and realized it really didn't matter what brought about the change. Her long relationship with Purple put her human condition in perspective, How strange of our species to believe our own selves to be the only unchangeable entities in a universe always in flux. She sat in the garden long into the night, in the humid scent of vanilla and gardenias, thinking of the details she still had to sort out for the ceremony, about Lelia and Isolde, and about the generation before them, her beloved pupils, so close to her heart. For a moment she was back in the apothecary, watching Jimmy pull pranks on his classmates, while Lily organized their efforts with the confidence of a general. The stars appeared in the chocolate sky, one by one, popping between the brighter lights of the methane containers, and for a second she felt as if time had not passed at all. One of the side effects of living in paradise. Landing Bay, Terra 2, July 11, 3245. My beloved Lelia. I was a willful child. My mother blamed it on a deplorable lack of discipline during my developmental years and my father on some fateful genetic legacy, one that came with a fiery hair, no doubt, and for which he didn't feel his side of the family was in any way responsible. Time softened my rough edges. One starts noticing in adulthood that some of the most abrasive commentary served in the name of truth speaks more to the arguer's inner conflicts than to the situation at hand. We are often blindsided by people's personalities, values and reasons because we are used to whitewashing our surroundings until they reflect our own. It is more comfortable to live this way, in the world according to yourself. It doesn't require you to stretch your character to welcome other people's perspectives, and therefore it never forces you to choose between yours and another's point of view. We're all guilty of this at times. There is just too much information to process and one can't possibly analyze every thought during every moment of every day, but you should at least attempt to see your loved ones without passing them through the strainer of your own perception first. As you grow older, you start paying attention to who you really are, what you value, what you believe, what you love. I know you think you already have these things pegged, but you don't, not really. It is a paradox of the human mind that the less one knows about oneself, the more certain one is one has all the answers. My mind had to stretch, sometimes painfully, to realities I couldn't fathom in my sheltered childhood. I had to adjust to customs completely alien to me, surroundings that lacked in the most basic elements that make life sustainable, environments in which the laws of physics I grew up with simply did not apply. You learn to adapt really fast to these changes, become very quick on your feet, and take nothing for granted. You start realizing you are not a person reacting to an external environment, you are a symbiotic part of it, a parameter in a closed system, whose existence and actions always have an impact on the whole. This is an insight both thrilling and humbling, and after having it you stop indulging in the pests of the human spirit, false modesty, self-aggrandizing, phoniness, envy, anger, and despair. You are taught to do unto others as you would unto yourself, but oh, so many times, what you do unto yourself can so callous and damaging you wouldn't wish it on an enemy. What you wouldn't think or do to others you shouldn't do to yourself, either, because you are equally important in your world to anything else around you. Once you realize your life is a responsibility as much as it is a gift, you start questioning your own choices, you become aware of risks you didn't notice in your younger, more innocent years, you see your life path as a whole, not a day-by-day set of stepping stones that just happen to fall into place. You realize you have to plan the way you want your story to unfold, it won't just happen to you, and if it does, that is not a desirable outcome. You come to terms with the fact that you are not the person you thought you were, and start cleaning those nooks and crannies of your mind where you dump the truths and feelings you don't want to confront, places that, just like a junk drawer, tend to fill up quicker than you have time to find more storage space. You lose your mind shackles when you discard your need to be sure, right, safe and accepted. When this happens you are petrified because you are not used to deciding what you want to contribute to the world. You just assume the world will present you with a set circumstances that you'll have to react to. Having choice is terrifying, exhilarating, burdensome, and a great honor. Don't take it in stride. Don't expect it to go away. Don't assume somebody else will take care of it. It's all you, baby. You're the master of your life. You clean it. You lead it. You keep it wholesome, you reap the benefits, you bear the responsibilities, and aside from God you should be the one who loves you most. How else are you going to engender trust and excitement in other people over your life's purpose? It is harder to live this way, by orders of magnitude, but no human born would ever consider going back to the way they were after their eyes had been opened to this extraordinary world of wonders that we have the privilege to share. As for my hair, I don't know what distant ancestor bequeathed it to me. It may or may not have influenced my personality, because I love my work and am so devoted to it, I learned the qualities that didn't come naturally to me, patience, confidence, decisiveness, authority. It turns out one can successfully run a science hub with a soft voice and an accommodating temperament, even if one tends to get sidetracked on occasion and one's fiery hair can be spotted from a mile away. The only question that remains is, what do you want to do? I love you, sweetie, and wish you nothing but the best. Yours truly, Sarah.